Australian Aboriginal culture is widely recognised as the oldest living culture in the world, but have you ever wondered what it was like to live by the stars? The latest study in Aboriginal astronomy has found a site that could be older than Stonehenge and even predate the Great Pyramids of Giza. Joining me this evening are Dwayne Harmacher and Jesse Flay, who are both working in the field of Aboriginal culture and astronomy. Now, Dwayne, you've been involved with work around the Wurdi Yuang site in Victoria. What have you found?
Well, we've been working on this for several years, and some of the previous work we did showed that the stone arrangement has very clear indications of the setting sun at the solstices and equinox, which is pretty fantastic. But what we're finding out now is that the area where the stone arrangement is located seems to have archaeological evidence of agriculture and possibly even villages. There's a permanent water source nearby, and the stone arrangement that marks out the sun throughout the year would really make sense if the people living there were there year-round. So it's opening up some new territory in the idea that the Wathaurong and people around that area were practicing agriculture and living, you know, in settlements quite some time ago. So now we're trying to look at figuring out how old this site is.
Can you just tell us, for somebody in your field, how significant a discovery like this is?
There are stone arrangements around the world that are well known to have some kind of astronomical alignments. I mean, Stonehenge is obviously the most famous, but there are a number around the world. The oldest site that we know of is in southern Egypt, and I believe that dates to around 7,000 years ago. We don't know how old this site is, but sites very close to it have been dated between 11 and 14,000 years old. So if this does date, the stone arrangement does date to that time era, it predates all other known stone arrangement sites in the world with any sort of astronomical alignment. It also pushes back agriculture in Australia to the Neolithic, when that was happening globally.
Yeah, it's a very fascinating thing that you're discovering here about that layer of agriculture, the village, the permanent water source. Of course, there's such a perception of Indigenous people as a hunter-gatherer society. And, you know, of course, recently books like Dark Emu by Bruce Pascoe have challenged that. But these discoveries that you're making, what sort of impact do you think they'll have on the local Indigenous communities and the way they understand their cultural heritage?
Well, I work closely with the traditional custodians and the traditional owners. And, I mean, I can only tell you what they've told me. I couldn't pretend to speak on their behalf. But they're doing a lot of work in that area around the stone arrangement. They've gained access, ownership to that entire region. And they're working on planting native crops, putting native plants back in. And there's a lot of things they're trying to do to turn it from what's become, you know, farmland the last 150 years back to native bush. And they're wanting to incorporate more of the astronomy in that aspect too, and actually have tour groups coming through. So we're working with the rangers to establish some knowledge for those guys on how the sky works. And then, of course, they're working with other community elders to learn some of the old traditional stories about astronomy. So we're bringing together both the Western and the Aboriginal perspectives.
Are you finding, as you're working closely with the local communities there, the Indigenous community, that bits of knowledge are sort of coming to the surface that people might not have realised were important or they haven't discussed before?
That's always the situation. So when I go to some remote communities, and I come from a Western education background, obviously. My background is in astrophysics. And I start talking about astronomy, a lot of people don't understand initially what I mean when I say astronomy. They think, oh, well, we don't know anything about that. And then they start talking about stories of the sun, the moon, how to read the stars, what the rising and setting means. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. That's astronomy. And they're like, oh, well, yeah, we have tons of that. And then you start to you're sitting and listening to these elders unpack these tremendous quantities of information about the sun, moon, and stars with just such depth and complexity. It's fascinating.
Now, Jesse, you're currently a student but involved in very similar work. What made you decide to go into this field of study?
So I think that it's really important that culture and science plays a part in the upbringing of our youth. And I think that inclusiveness and belongingness is stemmed from being critical consumers of your own knowledge. And I think that science is important to fostering that critical understanding of the world. So when we talk about astronomy in an Indigenous perspective and a scientific perspective, there's definitely a place where those two can meet, and we can definitely foster more understanding between two different cultures.
And recently there was an Indigenous Science Symposium held in Sydney. What were some of the key points to come out of that?
I think the most important points, I mean, you can look at it from a cross-disciplinary approach. There were astronomy submissions, there was biomedical, veterinarian sciences. All of these things are important to understanding some of the gaps between Indigenous Australians and non-Indigenous Australians. So the strongest science that comes out of that is informing policy to enhance the quality of life of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia.
Do you still get people wondering what Indigenous knowledges can give to science?
I think that's definitely a huge problem right now. A lot of people don't quite understand the application of it. I think that I'm more concerned with what you can learn from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander stories in Western Australia, Noongar stories, sky stories, earth stories. It's not necessarily just the story and the beauty in the story, it's the meaning that people can get out of the story. And I think that there is a link between science and culture.
And Jesse, from your work, what have you found out about the complexity of Aboriginal knowledge systems?
Interestingly, I found that it's not quite more complex than Western science and the history of Western science. It's as important and as historical. If you look at some of the early Greek philosophy that certainly stemmed towards scientific understanding, the allegory of Plato's cave, there's similarities between that and the allegory of Malka's cave in Western Australia. It's not necessarily whether the event happened, it's the truth element that you can get out of the story. And I think that that belongs in our classrooms.
And it must be really interesting for you to be now looking at ways to expand that knowledge base, because probably, you know, like most Indigenous people going through school, you didn't learn about Indigenous knowledges. What would you hope the role of these could be in not just Indigenous education, but in education more widely? How could we be using what you're learning?
I think that the role of it is basically in engaging students in a way that appeals to them and appeals to their creativity, their sense of belonging in culture and society, and understanding science in a more holistic approach.
And you're just finishing your PhD, or you're doing your PhD. When will you finish that up?
At the very beginning of my journey, and I've got, I think, about 3 or 4 years. So I've got quite a lot of time to put together the understanding that I get from the review and start to look at the way that maybe a curriculum could be constructed in universities, high schools and primary schools in Australia.
Well, it's fantastic to see young Indigenous people taking on this kind of work. But Duane, just also finally in relation to your work, you've obviously made some very significant findings at this site, but these discoveries are sometimes just the beginning. What are the next big questions that you want to look at in your work?
Well, what we're trying to answer now, one of the big questions, is how old this site is. How far back does this go? Is there more evidence of agriculture and sort of permanent settlements there? I mean, there's a lot of archaeological and anthropological questions that can be asked from this. So, you know, this is one of these instances where I'm not really discovering anything. I'm standing on the shoulders of people who've done a lot of this work before and just sort of, moving on and expanding beyond that. So with the traditional owners and the traditional custodians right now, the next major steps are to work with them to figure out how old this thing is and do more archaeology in the site, but also help them develop the tourism and education programs they wish to implement there, incorporating astronomy and landscape as part of that.
Well, you know, it's great. Both of you in different ways are doing work that's not just enlightening other cultures about the richness of Indigenous culture, but I think for Indigenous people, we find it also incredibly powerful to see our cultures being brought to life in these ways. So thank you so much for being with us this evening and discussing your really important work.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
My guests this evening have been Dr. Duane Harmacher from Monash University and Jesse Flay, PhD candidate at Edith Cowan University.